Hey folks, Chris Versace here, and we have another podcast to share with you, members of the Street Pro. And I gotta tell you, from time to time, I have the pleasure of talking with some of the contributors here. And today, once again, we are trotting out a simply fantastic person, and I think we're gonna have an excellent conversation. That's right, we're talking with Top Stock's own Helene Meisler, as Doug Cass likes to call her, the divine Ms. M. Helene, always a pleasure to chat. You know, as I said to you when we were chatting recently, I said, it's so great to have these conversations with you. The only thing I wish is that we had started having them sooner than we did.
Well, you know,
We can only go forward.
We can only go forward from here, Chris.
I was going to, boy, that is not the right back at you I was hoping to hear, but that's quite fine. I do know that you're quite the character, so I'll let it slide. I know.
I didn't mean it that way, but quite frankly, I mean, I really do enjoy our chats, and I do enjoy our chats when we review the portfolio in AAP too.
That's Ixnine Turpentine, no longer AAP. That is to everybody the Street Pro Portfolio, and I hope that we get to do that again. Maybe we'll touch on one or two names in this podcast conversation. But what I really want to tap into, Helene, is kind of your thoughts on the overall market. And I'd like to start with the S&P 500. I say that just to set the landscape. You know, we just hit a new high in the S&P 500, really catapulted ahead by what the market thought it heard yesterday from Fed Chair Powell, kind of delivering a message that not only I, but also I chatted with Sarge Guilfoyle this morning. Even he was a little disappointed that the Fed didn't come out a little tougher, if you will, regarding inflation and the prospects for what it could really mean for rate cuts. Instead, they kind of reiterated in their forecast, still seeing three. That's the same as what they saw in December, even though the inflation data of late has moved the wrong way. But again, I think the market is simply going, oh yes, still potential three rate cuts. Boom, up we move. I'm a skeptic on that. I don't think we're going to get three. I think by the middle of the year, if the data continues to hold the way we're seeing it, it's going to be more like two. But the positive is the economy seems to be performing well, and that's kind of helping the current narrative in the marketplace. So with that said, what do you see for the S&P 500?
Well, I'll tell you what, I liken this search for lower interest rates and the constant lower rates are coming, don't you worry. I liken it to when we were in the middle of trade negotiations with China, and every time the market would sort of droop, you'd get, but a trade deal is coming. A constant refrain of a trade deal is coming, and in the end we got phase one, and we never really got a trade deal.
Yeah,
I think phase one was tariffs or whatever.
Oh, but it's the same thing, right? Where the timing is just getting pushed out. At some point, it will happen. I think the odds of the Fed eventually cutting rates is far better than, you know, if we go back in time, a trade deal. But you know, the only thing that concerns me about it is that it's the market has baked certain expectations for certain sectors, depending on when it currently or then expected rate cuts to begin, that kind of flows through to earnings expectations for the S&P 500. At least that's how when I put on my fundamental hat, I tend to think about it. But again, you know, I'm fundamentals, you're more technicals and charts. Talk to me about this upward channel for the S&P 500 that you shared with folks who read Top Stocks when you published this last night. And folks, folks who are listening, Top Stocks is now part of the Street Pro. So I would encourage you to take a look at it. It's under the column section, under the head menu. So you can find all of what Helene has to say there. Please do yourself a favor, check it out.
Okay, so in technical analysis, we draw lines. It's basic geometry. Two points make a line. A third confirms it. The more points on the line, the better the line. I mean, this is, you know, we stuff we all learned in grade school. All right, maybe middle school. Anyway, we have had this upward line that connects all the lows in the S&P, NASDAQ, the Qs, SOX. I mean, it's everywhere. Even the IWM, the Russell, it's everywhere, this line. And we have not broken that line since December. That's where the line begins. So for all intents and purposes, let's call it the 2024 line.
Okay.
Okay. There is another line, and that also begins back in December. And what I do there is I connect all the highs in the market. So picture two uptrend trend lines running parallel. And every single time we've notched up to the top of that line, we've backed off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's higher highs and higher lows.
Right.
For the last basically 4 months. That's the uptrend. We're in an uptrend. That's it. And so I think until that changes, either we bust out on the upside or we bust out on the downside, that channel has been intact and it should stay that way. The top end of that channel, and remember, it rises as time goes on. So if it's 5,300 today, it's 5,320 like in 2 days.
Could be.
No, the channel is never going to change because it's a line. That is stagnant.
Okay.
Whether or not the market gets to the line is a could be.
Okay. Right.
But the line is not changing. It is where it is, and it's rising as time goes on.
Okay.
And so, you know, a week from now, that line could be 5,350 just because it's rising at a certain angle. Anyway, so the market is overbought on some factors. It's overbought. And I think as we get to that line, the overbought condition will matter.
Okay.
Because for now, you know, as they say, a trend in motion stays in motion. And don't fight the trend and all the rest of that. And the trend has been to back off from that line every time we get there. And the other part of it is to bounce off the lower line every time we get there. So until something changes, that's the market we're in.
So it sounds like we're going to creep higher, kind of ping-ponging between those lines. So if it's 5,300, 53, moving 5,320, you know, moving higher as that line progresses, that, to use, I guess, the math term, that asymptotic line.
Good word, Chris.
I double major math and economics, which makes you wonder why I write so much. But
impressive, very impressive.
So the question I want to ask though is, if it's 5,300 moving higher on the higher end, that bottom line, right? Where is that today? And you know, as I think about this conceptually, I suspect folks will be thinking, oh, we're trapped in a channel. Let me, you know, buy when we bounce off that lower level. Maybe, you know, trim if I'm a trader towards that upper line. So just 5,300 moving higher, where's the lower end of that line that we need to be mindful of?
It was 50-50 earlier this week. So I would say it's probably about 5,100 by Friday.
Okay. So that's pretty tight. 200 points.
It's been an incredibly tight channel. Incredibly tight channel, which is why, you know, everyone has called the market, well, not everybody, but many have called the market a melt-up, but it really isn't. Because do you know that until yesterday, we had not had three green days in a row in the S&P or NASDAQ since early February?
You know, I did know that, but only because you tweeted it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that, again, everyone has this vision in their head that it has been straight up and it's been a gradual uptrend.
Is that, from your perspective, is that sign of a positive, maybe enduring market?
No.
Just, okay.
And the reason is because every trend, you know, there's an old joke in technical circles, uptrend lines are made to be broken. Like a channel like that really is unlikely to persist much, you know, for many, many more months. It's, you know, and markets eventually correct, and they correct properly, meaning you'll get a 5 or 10% correction, not a, you know, 2% correction.
So in your experience, what are some of the things that lead to that channel breaking?
My experience is that if we knew the reason that the channel would break, it would already be priced in. Because, you know, that's a function of markets. I mean, I can speculate a million different ways from Sunday, right, but I don't know. The CPI doesn't come down and it keeps cranking up. Bonds collapse. I can give you 5 million reasons. The economy slows, bonds collapse, and so you have stagflation. I mean, earnings when the quarter is reported a month from now, you know, are terrible. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. No. It's, you know, because folks who are listening to this are being like, okay, I see what she's saying. Okay, what are the warning signs I need to be careful of? And I think what you're saying, you said it a second ago, it's that the market's overbought, and as it becomes increasingly overbought and we hit that upper end of the channel, you know, we need to be a little more cautious as investors.
Right. Yes, that is true. And you have to be cognizant of, about 2 weeks ago, I forget. I think it's about 10 days ago, we had a big reversal in the market. If you'll remember, NVIDIA was up, it was a Friday, and it reversed and closed down on the day, and everybody made a big deal over it. And, you know, I thought it was just standard kind of overboughtness. But what we have to be cognizant is there are now a lot of those spike highs in individual stocks up there. And generally speaking, that means you have a bag holder up there, right? Mm-hmm. I can't remember the price. I'm not very good at this, but let's say it was $9.50 on NVIDIA. I don't remember if that was the price, but let's say it was $9.50. And I've got a lot of people who now have suffered a 200 point decline in NVIDIA.
Right.
Okay. And they may be happy to get out at 9.50 again, and thank God, because I was really suffering.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
So that those kinds of spike highs will tend to be resistance on your first trip up there. You know, if you take a look at the spike high we had in gold a few weeks ago, that should also be a little bit of a challenge. We've had some spike highs in some of the industrials. Mm-hmm. So as you go through a lot of the charts, like we had, I don't know if you remember, but also about 2 weeks ago, drug stocks had started to sort of come alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they backed off. But now they'll have to contend with those little short-term highs. And so that's kind of where we're at in the market as we look at all the individual stocks. So what happens? What happens is, let's say in terms of the SOX, the semiconductor index, the uptrend line there came in around 4,800. And I had in my column and in my top stocks 2 days ago that I thought we were oversold enough and we should bounce from there. And the high there was, I think, just on the semiconductor index, it was around 5,200. Okay, and that's a spike high. I think it's unlikely we're going to go from 4,200. I'm sorry, from 4,800 to 5,200 and just keep going. That would be unusual. What would be more typical would be maybe you get to 5,000, you back off again, and maybe the buyers come in again. Well, but it's on that secondary dip down. You have to search for, are the buyers coming back?
Okay.
Okay, that's your big question. So it's not that the buyers didn't come in at 4,800 because they did, as I thought they should. But my question will be, let's say we come down again. Let's say we get to 5,000, 5,100, whatever. And we come down and the buyers don't show up again.
Right.
That's when you got to start worrying.
Okay. So it's incremental.
Because that's what support, or so, who's coming in to support the stock at that level.
Right, right. And that's where some of the fundamentals kind of come in. Are we seeing like a strengthening in the end markets or, you know, companies that kind of make that? So like this week we had NVIDIA's keynote speech with Jensen Huang, where he had a lot to say. But last night we had Micron's earnings, which were far better than expected. Guidance was great. And, you know, from an end market perspective, very good things for data center PCs and incrementally positive on smartphones, right? So
AMD is negative, is red today after trying to rally.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
So that's what I mean. Like, that's what we start, you know, AMD is sitting right at a line, but you've really got to be cognizant of the fact that it tried to rally in a hot semi market today.
And it did not.
And it's not. So that's the kind of stuff that I have to pay attention to, because at some point we're going to get a crap. Nothing lasts forever.
Right. Okay. So that's the S&P 500, 48 to, let me check my notes here, 5,100 to 5,300, inching higher that way. What about the NASDAQ? You just mentioned the SOX. Can we pull back a little bit and talk about that, the NASDAQ?
And I won't have the exact numbers on NASDAQ, sorry to say.
No, that's okay.
My brain doesn't work that well. I do know the lower band on the Qs was 430, the lower line. And so that's rising as time goes on. I don't have the upper number in my head there.
But you write about it in Top Stocks, we can find it there.
Yes, I will give you the upper line there. But you know, the Qs and NASDAQ have been very different than the S&P. The S&P has been outperforming in that, just take a look at how the Qs are still struggling at that 16,000, not the Qs, I'm sorry, NASDAQ is still struggling at that 16,000 area, whereas the S&P is left behind 4,800 weeks ago.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe it's Apple, maybe it's this. Maybe I don't like to make excuses. I don't like to rationalize. The fact is that as hot as technology is, the technology index, i.e. NASDAQ, is kind of flopping around.
Well, I think you alluded to it. I joked about this before we started recording. It's now the Mag 2, the Tepid 5, right?
Right.
So, but we have started to see some nice moves. I mean, you know, you look at Alphabet, low 130s, moving up to like the mid 140s over the last week or so. You know, I was glad we added to that when we did. Microsoft kind of, you know, trading in a band, but Apple, to your point, you know, it recovered a little bit. You know, I think we're going to need to see what they say in June at WWDC to really get some firepower back in that name, hopefully. So, but we'll see. Are you incrementally bullish on the S&P 500 over the NASDAQ still? Or do you think there's, you need to be careful?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know that I necessarily favor one over the other, but, mm-hmm. Like I recommended Goldman Sachs yesterday. So that's obviously not a NASDAQ name.
Right. Okay.
You know, but at the same time, I've also recommended Amgen, which is in the Qs, which is a NASDAQ name.
So it sounds to me you're more, you're not thinking about either the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ. You're more inclined to look, as I do, for individual performers.
Yes, but in terms of the overall market, if the S&P comes down, NASDAQ's coming down. I don't think one is going down without the other.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's probably just a matter of magnitude.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a matter of Mag 7.
Yeah, I just absolutely hate that Mag 7 thing, because I don't think we've had a Mag 7 market since January. And yet, you know, maybe since before then. I think we've had, up until recently, we have predominantly had a big cap market.
Yes.
And I keep pointing out, why does nobody fuss over General Electric?
When you say fuss, what do you mean?
I mean, my God, if you just look around at market discussions, people will spend more time talking about AMD than they will about General Electric. And General Electric has outperformed AMD.
I
don't care about AMD at some point because GE is doing better.
Yeah, well, that's, I agree with you. I do think the conversation over the last, you know, maybe not the recent past, but certainly in the back half of 2023 was about the Mag 7 and those names. But you would have, if you only looked there, you would have missed some larger moves in other areas. You know, we've been fortunate enough to play some of those. United Rentals has been a great performer. Vulcan Materials has been a great performer. You know, and it just reminds you that, you know, you can't just get sucked into that little lens that the market uses. I always say that, you know, if you want to outperform the herd, you can't do what the herd is doing by definition.
Yep, I would not disagree at all. You know, also you have to pay attention, I think, to the fact that we're not really getting group moves.
Interesting.
Okay. Again, let me give you NVIDIA. NVIDIA has been spectacular. AMD, maybe not so much. NVIDIA has been great. Avago just broke its 50-day moving average the other day. You know, so I can't say all semis are created equal, if
right.
you will.
Right.
You know, and again, if you take a look at the banks, Bank of America has been okay, but JP Morgan has been spectacular. And then if you take a look at, I'll go back to the Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs basically was almost the exact same price last night that it was after the December Fed meeting. Morgan Stanley and Schwab, no, they've moved. They haven't moved. Nothing's moved like JP Morgan. So there's a dynamic in the market where you're not really getting group moves.
Right, right.
You're really getting, it's almost like one or two stocks in a group are getting all the love. Everything else is sort of getting dragged along, kicking and screaming.
Interesting, interesting.
And you know, I'm sure there's a fundamental reason behind it. I don't know, but I'm just telling you, in the past, a group movement, every damn thing went.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, look, we're long Morgan Stanley, we're long Bank of America, so I'm happy that you called those out. You know, the play on Morgan Stanley and to some extent Bank of America is the rebound in the IPO market. You know, JP Morgan, if you look at the league tables, extremely well positioned there, but on the individual category, so too are Bank of America and Morgan Stanley. But, I mean, let's be honest, the market, I think, has an affinity for Jamie Dimon. You know, he's... He's done a great job. I mean, you can't say that he hasn't. He has done a great job. And I think that, you know, he's when it comes to the banking industry, he's arguably the canary in the coal mine that everybody looks to. So
let me ask you this. How come people haven't fussed more over the fact that Jamie Dimon sold stock for the first time in how long?
I don't even know. I think they would probably look to see, A, how much stock does he have still? And then the other question is, and I suspect that this could be part of the answer, is Jamie not selling stock? Is it out of a 10b5-1 plan?
No, it's an active sale, and it's the first time in
Oh, years. Really? Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you a few others. We already know Zuckerberg sold some. We know Bezos sold some. And now Michael Dell is selling stock or has sold stock. You know, you're getting some high profile CEOs or at least high profile owners of stock who are doing some good size selling, which I find interesting. And I never like to rationalize with that
Well, but people buy stock for only one reason. They sell for a variety of reasons. Yeah, okay. I don't think Jamie Dimon is selling stock because he needs to pay for his children's education.
I was searching for a comeback, but you took it right out of me with that. So, well, you know what? It is something to be mindful of, and I don't want to tie it too back into what you were saying earlier that all uptrends break at some point. But you know, if as someone who looks for a lot of data points to kind of confirm what he's looking at and what may be happening, unfolding, if you will, that you know. If you saw one or two of those guys doing this, you could kind of say, okay, we'll see. But I think you're right. The more of them that we see, it's a lot harder to justify, you know, the continued melt up or move higher for the market channel.
Yeah. And you know, just to wrap that whole story up, I would tell you in terms of sentiment in the market, the Investors Intelligence bulls are at 60%. The National Association of Active Investment Managers, their exposure to the market is at 105, which means they're on kind of margined up a little bit. And the consensus bulls are at 79, which is the highest reading in 20 years.
Okay, so we might be a little ahead of ourselves.
And finally, on a very shorter term basis, I followed the daily sentiment indicator, and for the S&P, that was at 80 last night, and that's on a scale of 0 to 100. So when it gets over 85, it's a yellow flashing light. 90 is a red flashing light. And so, you know, if we maintain the rally we have in the market today, always a question, but if we do, I'd imagine you're going to be pushing up closer to 83 or 84. By the end of the day. And, you know, again, if you keep going up for the next few days, you're going to be over 85 right around the time the S&P tags that upper line.
Happy Easter.
You know, what can I say? That's just the way it goes.
Well, it is kind of funny. Just, you know, I was looking in the economic calendar next week, and it's kind of light. The only real big indicator that comes out is going to be the February PCE, which of course everybody's going to take a look at. Yeah. And you know when it comes out? Friday, when the market's closed.
So I have a story for you, Chris. Back when I was managing money, so you know, 30 years ago, the bond market used to be open on Good Friday.
Oh.
And the stock market was closed.
Rare.
I don't remember. Tell me when do the government stay open and the capitalists don't? Amazing. But that's the way it used to be. And my boss at the time was on vacation. And he had, oh God, he had all these puts on the S&P and he was short futures. And it was 1994, I remember the year. And he left me to manage the position while he went on vacation. Right? And so I had to come to work on that Friday because we were getting, I think, an employment number or some data point, and the bonds were going to be open. And I don't know if you remember, but 1994, the Fed was hiking. It was a
yes.
hiking stop.
Yeah.
And whatever the data, whatever the number was that day, I think it must have been April, whatever the number was, the bonds didn't like it and they went down the limit. I don't even know if we have bonds have the limit down anymore, but 3 points was the limit and bonds went down the limit and the S&P futures tanked. And, you know, and I don't even remember where he was on vacation, but he's calling me.
Right.
Me, cover the shorts.
Well, all I can say to that is this, that even though it's a market holiday on the 29th, because of the new features on the new website, I can actually share with members some quick reactions in the forum. to the February PCE data. So I'm going to do that only because that data, in my opinion, is going to tell us how we're going to start the second quarter.
All right. And if I recall, the Fed cares a lot about the PCE.
That would be correct. That's their, quote, preferred inflation metric. But my take on that is they look at all of them, right? And yeah. I think they want to see a uniform movement down to their target. So, you know, we have a ways to go with the core CPI, and the data of late has moved in the wrong direction. And I think I said this earlier, but if I didn't, I will now. The March flash PMI simply supports the notion that we're not going to see a lot of progress in the March CPI, March PPI. So I
would add one more little piece to your puzzle.
Oh, please do. Please do.
It's also the end of the quarter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 You're right. You're right on that.
So, you've got a lot of dynamics going on at the end of next week.
100% we do. We 100%. It's also going to be the time when we companies are in their, quote, quiet period, and then we're going to start paying attention for pre-announcements, positive and negative. So there's a lot that can happen. I'm still concerned, just to wrap this up, that the Fed's comments were not where they needed to be yesterday. And I think as we get more data, perhaps that realization that they need to be a little more sobering, perhaps that's one of those factors among maybe a growing list of ones that tell us we need to be a little careful as we close out the quarter and start the new one. We will see.
You know, I love it when you put a story together with my data.
I do too, because you make it easy.
Yeah. No, I do. I think, I'm terrible at narratives, so I like the way you put the story together.
Well, I appreciate that. But remember, it's a marvel to a lot of people. Double major math and economics. How is it that he writes so much? Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Because you're all good right. With words, too.
Maybe the same words over and over. We'll see. All right, let's leave it there, Helene. Thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to having you back again and sharing all the insights that you have, as well as that wonderful sense of humor and, of course, that sarcastic wit. I, of course, appreciate all of that. And members, that's the podcast for today. Be sure to check your inboxes about alerts. Be sure to go and check out what Helene has to say, not only in her column, but also what is published under Top Stocks. As you can tell, there is a lot of insight, a lot of help that you can get from reading The Divine Ms. M. Thanks for listening, folks.